welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is May 21st, 2014. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today I have with me Kelly Gumont. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Jeff.
I hope you're doing well.
I am, and I hope you are as well.
Always. And I also have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. I am great.
Awesome. And thank you both for joining me. I really mixed it up today. The last couple shows, I had Dave and Brian with me, and so I thought I'd just kind of keep everyone on their toes, go with completely different people today. And I think both of you are exactly the right people to talk about the topics that we have lined up. So first up, Microsoft announced a new Surface tablet, which I
they did.
Yes, I found that to be very interesting. And
I told them not to.
Yeah, oh, and see, and that's part of the reason why I found it really interesting, because why did they not listen to you, John?
I don't know. They must not have been paying attention. But there were a lot of people who told them, hey, look, this is a shaky idea. You need to get out of this business or ship a real tablet or rethink this whole situation. But they're wrapped around the axle with, the RT tablet that they want to get away from, deciding whether they, want to do ARM or Intel. This business of Windows not being a really great mobile operating system. And it just, there's so many problems, and that's competition with the other OEM manufacturers. So what do they do to solve this problem? They just repeat the process, rinse, and come out with the Surface Pro 3. It's crazy.
Yeah, on the crazy note, I thought it was crazy the comparisons that they were making between this tablet and laptop computers.
Right, and so it's clear that the tablet aspect with a attached keyboard didn't really go the first time, the first two rounds. And so, there's a new strategy here. We won't compete against tablets because our tablet failed. So now we'll pit our tablet against notebook computers, and we'll pit them against the very best, awesome, most greatest MacBook Airs ever built.
What could possibly go wrong?
Right, and we'll advertise that it weighs less. Oh, wonderful. And it has a touch screen. And, oh, by the way, it's a toaster fridge, and you're going to love it.
I'm just confused because it's very much a toaster fridge, but also because I don't understand the strategy behind this. We've seen Microsoft cling to a clearly failing model, more than once in the past, but this is the way we do it. And the problem isn't us. And that's the thing that is very interesting to me, particularly in light of the piece I wrote last week about when Steve Jobs came out on stage and talked about how video was the way of the future and the first piece of the digital hub was video. And then Napster was everywhere. And then, people swapping MP3s and like the MP3 player market, even though most of the hardware was crap, was really where people were spending their time and money. And so Apple had to pivot in like a year and came out with iTunes and an iPod in about a 14-month development cycle, which to me is really impressive. And it was because they saw where their customers were and decided to give their customers the best experience where they were at. And I've never seen that kind of approach from Microsoft. And it shows, regardless of what it is that they're trying to sell. What's wrong with us trying to give you a video game system that includes an attached camera that stares at you all the time waiting for you to talk to it? We don't understand the problem. We don't understand why it's not a big deal, why it would be a big deal to you that you can't play any of the old games that have worked on the previous three generations of the Xbox. So what if you can't play them on your new system? Like, what does that even matter? And it is them, I think, is really what I'm looking for here. To do something like this and go, we didn't do a very good job of giving you a laptop experience on the Surface. And we also didn't do a very good job of giving you a tablet experience on the Surface. So now we're going to do it again.
Right. Exactly. And it makes you wonder what Microsoft's ultimate agenda is here. It's obviously not to make an insanely great product that people love and makes a lot of money for the company. Yeah. It's obviously not an attempt to move into the tablet metaphor because they're focusing more on this laptop experience by improving the keyboard. And one of the things that stuck out in my mind was, you know, a laptop fits comfortably on your laptop and has an awesome liquid keyboard. When I see people holding the Surface Pro on their lap with the kickstand and the way that keyboard looks, it looks very awkward, and it goes against the legacy of all the notebooks that have ever been created, and it looks like a very difficult thing to handle on the target audience for a laptop.
Well, and I know a number of people who discussed it yesterday who said exactly that. I am a train commuter. You know, I spend an hour, like there are people who live on the East Coast. I spend an hour on the train every day, and I don't always have a horizontal surface that is stable enough for me to set something on. I cannot buy this computer, even if I want it, because the bulk of the time that I spend with it is it. I can't use it that way. I can't set it in my lap.
Right. It's a question of balance. On a notebook computer, the keyboard provides a stable, not heavy, but stable, somewhat massive platform to which a light display is attached so that it doesn't throw the device around and get top heavy.
Right.
Surface Pro looks to me like it's backwards in that respect. You've got a very light keyboard and you've got, and not too heavy, but a heavier display. Yeah. So it's going to be kind of top heavy on the lap, as you said.
All right. So we're looking at this. All three of us, I think, are in agreement. This is another WTF product from Microsoft. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if it matters that this is another example of Microsoft not getting it right, because they have made changes and potentially improvements. And Microsoft has a long history of throwing something out and then just continuing to beat and beat and beat on the market.
There's that old adage about Microsoft gets it right on the third version, but I don't think they did it this time. You know, you can take an Edsel and give it 10 more horsepower and tinted glass, and it's still an Edsel.
Yeah.
Well, it could be this is still the first version, because even though it's a different model number, we're on the third revision of the Surface. The Surface may be the first version of whatever it is. They'll come out with a second version of, you know, building off of this tablet metaphor. And then whatever they come up with after that second thing, maybe that's when they finally get it right.
You know, Kelly came up with something interesting yesterday. Kelly and I were talking about manufacturing process and why this device seems to be so expensive, and one of our other writers, Melissa Holt, mentioned that, you know, you could buy a MacBook Air and an iPad for the price of the high-end Surface Pro 3,
which is another reason I think they've started comparing to laptops, because they know that
the price point.
On paper they can't compare with they don't compare with a tablet.
Exactly. And so in my mind, the question is, once you delve into this Intel chipset and the price points and the quantities that you expect to build, and as you said, the mojo of the supply chain that Apple has in comparison, it certainly seems to me that the device is much more expensive than you would hope it would be for a modest product like that. And it also maybe is shows the wisdom of Apple reducing the price of the MacBook Air about a month ago, $100. Mm-hmm. That was a bolt that was intended to, you know, cut this kind of thing off at the pass.
Certainly.
And what an interesting switch, having Microsoft as the company that's selling the expensive product and Apple selling the less expensive product.
And not the common product. Like, people look at the thing from – people go – here's the thing from Microsoft. Is it just like the thing from Apple? No. Then why do I want one? And, you know, 10 years ago, that was the opposite conversation. Apple put out a new thing. Well, why do I want that?
It's not mainstream. Tablets are mainstream. Cool notebook computers like MacBooks are mainstream. Mm-hmm. What is this? What is this animal? It's like an outsider banging on the glass. Like, let me in, let me in. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. As much as I would love to just keep going on and on about how confused you are with the Surface, I do want to hit another WTF thing quickly before we wrap up today. Mm-hmm. And that's an SEC filing from Google that reveals that they're looking at all platforms that they touch as fair game for ad placement, which means these refrigerators that are coming out that have Google interfaces built in could start mm-hmm. serving ads. The car dashboards that have Android built in could mm-hmm. start serving ads. How about thermostats serving ads? And they do own Nest.
Of course, I spend all day long staring at my thermostat, waiting for something interesting to appear on the display.
Well, good news, John. That may happen soon.
You'll have much less waiting to do now, John.
Yeah, right. I can just take a height chair and just, you know, sit there and wait and pine away.
The thing that struck me the most about seeing this go by this morning was when Google bought Nest initially, the internet had two primary reactions. And the first was, I hope they don't kill it like they do everything else they buy. I love my Nest. And the second reaction was, great, now I'm going to need a Google Plus account to share the temperature in my living room with all my friends.
I laugh only because it hurts.
and people went, oh, haha. And then Google came out and said, you know, it was that sort of cotton candy kind of statement. Like, you know, when you finally dig through it, there is no there. But they came out and said the sorts of things that made most people happy about, you know, I guess my Nest will be okay. I guess I will get a second one like I had, you know, that kind of thing. And now it's going to be advertisements. And I think the thing that is going to make or break this is how the advertising works. Because it may just be that they, and I'm not saying that this is what Google did by any stretch of the imagination, but it is entirely possible that Google said everything because they mean everything, so that it's sort of future-proofing this filing that they had.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also possible that what they really want to do is the kind of stuff that might, in a weird way, actually be helpful for some people. Like, if you put milk in your refrigerator all the time, there used to be the thing where people talked about how it would scan the barcode of the thing that you took in and out of the refrigerator, and it would make the shopping list for you,
mm-hmm.
which would be awesome. In my world, I think that would be great. Being able to do something like, there's a, you know, I take the salsa out of the refrigerator all the time, and did you know there's a coupon for salsa up at Fred Meyer? Or
how
in
about
cars,
your
location stuff.
Sure. Or it's time to replace the filter in your furnace. And mm-hmm. So now you get ads saying, here's three companies that are offering deals on the filter you need.
Yeah. Now, see, that is a convenience feature, because who besides me knows what size furnace filter their furnace actually takes? And I only know because I took a picture of it and stuck it in my phone, so I wouldn't have to remember it anymore.
And this is why you rock.
Well, I like, on the one hand, I see where this could be a good thing. Like, if the car knows that I live in Oregon and I'm headed down I-5 to California, and it goes, did you know the northernmost In-N-Out burger is at the next exit? I'm going to be very excited by that information.
Yeah, see, there's a lot of potential for good here, just like with Google now. Mm-hmm. But the trade-off is we have to give up so much of our personal information. But if we're getting something in return,
The trade-off isn't that you have to give it. The trade-off is that you have to give it to Google. Like, if I was giving this kind of information to Apple, I think I would feel less icky about it. But handing this kind of information over to Google on a regular basis makes me feel like I need a Silkwood shower.
Yeah, good times. Yeah. You know, okay, so the big problem I see here is a trust issue. And it feels like with Google saying, hey, look, thermostats will be fair game, mm-hmm. they're breaking the trust with current Nest customers, even if they never put ads on a Nest thermostat.
Yes.
That's a trust issue.
It makes me think about the assessment of Google's approach to product marketing and productizing things. You know, we saw Google Glass thrown out there without too much thought about the social aspects of it. And what this makes me think about is that Google appears to have a kind of a simple-minded approach to this advertising business. In the rest of the world, nobody really likes to listen or watch ads. You know, we all have DVRs, or most of us mm-hmm. do. We skip over ads when we're watching a really good movie because, heaven knows, nobody likes to be watching a great movie like, you know, Iron Man and then have 7-minute break of commercials in the middle of it. So we tend to skip over those. And when you're in the car and you're listening to radio and somebody starts blaring at you about tire sales, you know, it's really easy to go over there and flip it off and, you know, have a minute of silence and get back to the music later.
I flip off the radio regularly.
Yeah, me too. So there is this general mentality that ads are irritating because they're not really well focused. Mm-hmm. Kelly, you were talking a second ago about, you know, better focused ads, but I'm generally not seeing that. I'm not seeing any kind of breakthrough. Google tends to throw those ads out there in a way that kind of looks like it's useful. But when you think about it for a second, you realize it's a little more self-serving than you would wanted it to be.
Well, that's where Google makes all their money. This is why Gmail is free and everybody has all the storage they could stand for Google Mail and Google Docs and all the other things that Google does that don't cost people anything.
I know.
It's because of the ad data for those who are playing along at home. Like, the ads are where they make their money. All that stuff over on the right-hand side, those top three Google hits in the big blue box, that's how Google is making their money.
Sure.
But they too, just like Microsoft, are being really tone-deaf about it.
If you believe that – if you make your living with ads, mm-hmm. then you're going to believe ads are a good thing. And you're not going to have much introspection about how they need to be better than just simply your perception of them being.
Right. And I think so far the breakthrough that you're talking about with relevant advertising is precisely because the only organization who has the resources to get this right is Google. And I really don't want to give them any information about me that they don't already have.
You know,
I'm not interested in giving them anything further. If Apple tried to do it, then it might be another story. And maybe something with the iBeacon, you know, that we're starting to see Apple evolving with, that might be the thing. Like, as I walk by purses in Macy's and it knows that I like to buy purses at Macy's, it says, hey, did you know that there's a 20% off coupon for purses at Macy's? And I go, excuse me a moment, I'll be over here. That would be a good thing. That would be the kind of advertising that would be okay with me if it wasn't Google doing it. And this is another, you know, we've seen this where Verizon is now trying to do the thing where if you pay your bill on your computer and log into the Verizon website and do anything on the Verizon website while you are logged in, it's going to set a persistent cookie that takes your browser history with you and ties that to the Verizon account that you signed in with. And so now if you've been looking up cat videos the entire time after you paid your Verizon bill, now on your phone, you're going to get pet food advertisements.
There's a subtle sad inside.
Well, that's the nut they're trying to crack is people who see something on their phone while they're out and about and then go home and buy it on their computer. And how do I figure out if the ad that I put up is working if I can't track any of that information anymore? Because it used to just be the TV and then the thing you read, whether it was a newspaper or a magazine. That was like the only places there were ads because that was the only places there were eyeballs.
So, yes. Kelly, there's a subtle implication in all this that I don't like that kind of bothers me. And it goes back to that example you were giving about a purse. You know, you're out shopping and Google knows that, you know, your wallet or your purse or your clothing is of a certain age because they know when you bought it, right? So you get a pop-up and says, oh, by the way, you know, these Dockers pants are on sale for 25% off. The implication is that you are going to take the advice of all of this stuff that's thrown at you. And the question is, while it may be a suggestion, do I need to do it? Should I spend the money? The implication is that you have a credit card with an unlimited credit account, and we're going to throw this stuff at you, and you should buy everything we recommend because it makes money for our advertisers. And there's no introspection about, ought I to engage in this? If the furnace filter is a year old, by golly, you better replace your furnace filter. But by and large, the rest of the stuff is optional. And in my mind, we're getting into a position where these recommendations are getting stronger and stronger. And a lot of people are not going to be able to resist it. And they're going to run up huge credit card accounts because their computer told them to buy these things. And there's no sense about how you decide when you're going to ignore what seems to be good advice.
But I am kind of looking forward to the class action suit against Google from all the people who filed bankruptcy because they did everything in the advertising.
All right. There you go. Yeah, there you go. And and on that incredibly uplifting note, I think this is a really great place for us to wrap up. Thank you so much, Kelly. Thank you so much, John, for joining me today. We'll have to do this again soon.
Let's.
All right.